Today is Mother's Day, as most of you know. I often see a lot of family groups on Mother's Day. I see fewer today than sometimes because the children ask Mother, what do you want? She says, why don't you come to Ananda with me? And so then I see all these children I rarely see. But less so today, but those of you who are here, I welcome you. Mother's Day is designed to celebrate the human mother, and it's an obvious transition for us to talk about the Divine Mother. But what I really want to talk about more is how much of this world is really symbolic of truths that are not obvious to the senses. Larry chose to read today that sort of heartfelt devotee's cry from Whispers from Eternity, oh Lord, please don't leave me to my own devices, because if you do, I'll make a mess of it. So the only hope is for you to sort of guide me and through this. I remember in one of the early years of my spiritual life, I was caught up, this was in 1971 or 72, very much at the beginning. I was caught up in all kinds of confusions about the direction of my life and how it should be lived. I was already established within the spiritual community of Ananda, where I've started and obviously still am. But I didn't really know how it should all unfold. And I was drawn in many directions with a powerful force that at the same time I knew were not really good directions for me. But I was powerless in the face of my own desires. At the beginning of the spiritual path, we think merely to be able to articulate an idea is the same thing as being able to express it completely in our lives. Sooner or later, that prideful thought is smashed on the rocks of our own actual experience. So I was going through that, and in the early morning when I would meditate, I would pray to Divine Mother, to Master, to my Guru, and I would say, if you give me a chance today, I'm going to do things we are all going to regret. So the only possibility of my not doing that is you must prevent me from having the opportunity to go wrong. Because as soon as I get up from here, I'm going to forget this conversation. But it was the darndest thing that in my moments of clarity, when I would offer that prayer all day long, much to my absolute frustration, I would be prevented from following what by that point I was wholeheartedly interested in doing, because Divine Mother was really taking care of me and protecting me. And over the course of, it took that particular little cycle of delusion, took, a year or two to sort itself out, gradually calm wisdom got the upper hand over short-term cheap thrills, and all more of my mental citizens, as Swami calls them, got on the side of right action. And now, of course, one looks back on these things and thinks, you know, what was the big deal? I mean, it was a huge tempest in a teapot at the time, but now you think, how could I have been so deluded? But the fact of the matter is, we are. That's just the way it works. This process of living in this world is not as obvious as it seems. And over the course of many, many incarnations, we get to have these experiences over and over and over again. And these experiences are Divine Mother saying to us, okay, if you insist, try it and see what happens. A friend of mine who's raising children was talking about the balance that she has to work out as a mother between just simply ordering her child to behave properly and giving the child enough scope that it can discover for itself why she says those things. You can tell a child that the stove is hot, don't touch it, but you'll just watch the child come back around and do it. Last week, I think in this class, I was talking about my little godson, 16 months old, wanting to experience experience what it was like to eat dirt, and how his mother and I were right there with him. He's 16 months old, but he figured out that he could kind of place himself behind a rose bush. Rose bushes are not real big, but he got himself right behind the thickest part of it until he could just was as hidden as possible, and then he would just very slowly go down like this and put the dirt in his mouth. He did it 3 times. You know, each time she would pick him up, no, darling, don't do that. It's bad. Wash his mouth out. And then he'd sort of just keep his eye on us. He'd go back there again. He'd go and get the dirt again, you know. It's like, this is your opinion, but what's my opinion in the matter? And Divine Mother is a wise mother. She understands that we're not going to take anybody's word for it. I mean, just look over the course of your own life. How many wrong things have you done that many people told you were going to be wrong things? And it's the oddest thing. I had a dear friend once, and she made an extremely unfortunate choice in her life that took quite a few years to unravel. And after it was all done, I, unwisely, but nonetheless, I was too inexperienced to know better, reminded her of the exact conversation in which I told her all this would happen. Because it was sort of like, why didn't you warn me? You could have seen this was a disaster. Sweetheart, I did warn you. I warned you very explicitly. No, you didn't, she said. Yes, I did. One of my friends once was about to go on a very unwise course of action, and he asked my advice. I told him I thought it would be a mitigated disaster. Instead of an unmitigated one, it would be mitigated, because even though it would end disastrously, he would probably learn something. And 5 years later, when it had proved to be a mitigated disaster, he came and said, yes, that's true. But we both knew that there was no way he was going to do anything except exactly what he was going to do. But this is the course of human life. And Swamiji, when he was speaking in Rome, we were in Italy with him, Swami Kriyananda, I know many of you are new today. He's the founder of our community, and David and I were recently in Italy, where he's staying for the rest of this month. And he gave many radio and television interviews during that time because he was launching a new book. And in one of the interviews, one of the interviewers asked him, you know, how did she phrase the question? The question was, you know, doesn't God get tired of us? Oh, I know what it was. He said, it was something to do with, you know, what do you do? How do you relate to people who are always doing the wrong thing? Swami had several answers. The first thing he said was, I'm glad it's not my problem. He said, I don't have to relate to them in any way at all because it's not my responsibility. Individuals are responsible for their own destiny. If they turn to you and ask you for help, then, of course, you can give them advice if they want it. But even then, Swamiji says, treat the request very, very sensitively. Because between people asking for help and actually wanting it, there's also a very huge gap, you know. And above all, we have to preserve what you would just call as our relationships with one another. You know, no individual point is more important than that sense of friendship and understanding. But Swamiji said, you know, God understands above all, of all realities in this world, the divine understands what we're up against. You know, with a kind of sense of humor that's not so easy to grasp, God made us this way. God created for us the most unusual circumstance, which is all our senses are turning outward with what Swami calls an instinctive inclination to just reach out for the world, to the world for our satisfaction, and yet also creating a universe in which everything is constantly changing. So the kind of enduring happiness and satisfaction we seek from getting the material world in perfect order is impossible to attain. So it's really a very bad joke before we have any other perspective on it, because it just is one that just leads us again and again to disappointment. You know, this even just the simple transition of age, of all the different things that can happen to us over the course of a lifetime, the way the body changes, the way our relationships change, the way the happy, effortless expectations of happiness that are characteristic of youth crash up against the rocks of how hard it is really to accomplish something in this world, you know, and then ill health, and I don't have to tell you all those stories. But in the midst of all of it, there's like a subtler melody that's also being played. And it's not being played with the brass band of external reality. The world, because this material world appears so seamless, we just naturally define everything as coming from the external. But there's this intuitive wisdom that's also planted in us, where we gradually begin to understand that all we're ever actually experiencing is our own consciousness. Now, when in the 1960s, when I was coming of age, and especially hallucinogenic drugs were beginning to be a really big story, Swami Kriyananda, who was teaching at that time, also was asked once, you know, what do you think of these drugs? He said, well, fundamentally, I'm against them. He said, it doesn't bring high consciousness. He said, but I have to admit, it has also helped some people because they have discovered that consciousness is everything. And once one begins to understand that all that I'm ever experiencing, as I said a moment ago, is my own consciousness, you begin to realize how much actual potential power we have over all our experiences. Recently, because all of these ideas in these, you know, now are really filtering down into mainstream culture, we have this phenomenon, this best-selling phenomenon called The Secret. And The Secret has been a DVD and a book, and it's easy to say that it could go farther, that it's a little materialistic in its point of view, but it doesn't really matter. It's a great piece of work, because the secret that's being revealed is that everything emanates from consciousness. And once you get that, it's interesting, a lot of the Vedas, the ancient scriptures, have in them recipes for how to achieve very materialistic ends, how to achieve power over this world, how to be able to manifest riches, how to get revenge against your enemies. You know, odd things you would think to find in a scripture. But the explanation is, the point is, this is what people desire anyway. And if they begin to understand that whatever they desire can be accomplished by developing your inner powers, once we have the experience of what certain actions bring us, we'll at least be looking in the right direction. And this fact is no longer the same secret that it used to be. The more we understand that it's really completely in my hands, we have a kind of a dichotomy happening in our culture now. On one side, the culture of being a victim is really, really big. The first, I was amused by the fact a friend of mine had built an entire internet business as a bookseller, and his 2-year-old son, who was very precocious on the computer, and the entire business was on the computer. You know how it is? And insufficiently backed up. You see where this is going. And this 2-year-old boy managed by random pressing of keys to destroy the entire business in an irretrievable manner. He just wiped it out. The father was wise enough to take that as a sign that he was supposed to do something else. That's one side of the story. But the funniest part of it was he was telling a friend of his who was an attorney, and the attorney said, golly, is there a lawsuit in there somewhere? But you see, that's how the mind works. Who can I blame? How can I pass this along? I've shared with you this story, but I'll tell it again here. Once when David and I were traveling in a motorhome, this was almost 30 years ago now. Couldn't have been, because we haven't been married that long. 25 years ago then. And he was driving, and I was in the back of the motorhome. It was a very spacious motorhome. And I was making a peanut butter sandwich. This is the great advantage of traveling in a motorhome. And the road was a little curvy, and as it turned out, David told me later, he became a little inattentive, was a little off, and made a sudden move like that. And what happened was the peanut butter jar rolled off the counter and hit me on the foot. And it was heavy enough to cause pain, not heavy enough to break my foot. But what was most remarkable, and I was able, by the grace of God, to watch it happen, the peanut butter jar comes off the counter, hits me on the foot. Just as the pain radiates to my brain, I have this intense desire to pass the pain along. You know? I wanted to just turn and do something to David. I didn't actually know he'd become inattentive, which he didn't tell me for maybe a year or two, which was a very good idea. I thought it had just been, that's why we've been married happily for all these years. He's very smart. But I thought we'd just been driving and it had just naturally rolled. But it was fascinating to me. Like, how would saying, why don't you drive more carefully, do anything for my foot? But there was just feeling. I hurt, and if I hurt, it, you know, pain comes to me, and if I pass it on, that somehow I'll have less of it. But of course, all we do is just set these waves in motion that come later back and hit us in the back of the head, and then we feel so surprised and victimized all over again, don't we? Right? These are the secrets that are planted in the heart of our own experience. Everything in this world is really just a symbol of something deeper. Once our perspective shifts from that, what are you doing to me, and how can I make them do what I want them to do, into an inner reality of, Lord, we're in this together. I was talking to someone not too long ago, and she's in a very difficult situation with a number of other people, and their behavior is less than ideal, and hers isn't so great either. So the combination of everybody working together is not so super. And what I said is, you must never be alone with those people. Of course, you know, that's, and what I meant by that was, you shouldn't go anywhere without the presence of God in your heart. And specifically, she has devotion to Paramhansa Yogananda. I said, you must always have Master with you. You mustn't even open your mouth without first saying, what would you do in this situation, sir? You know? Because everything in this world is happening on the obvious level of just going along. We were born, we live, we die, we make the best of it, and then we're born, we live, we die, we make the best of it, on and on and on and on. I watched this little baby in the airport. We were on our way flying back from Europe, and sometimes just before I fall asleep, there's just this moment where you know how it is. You know, you're tired, you want to sleep, but your mind is doing this, and there's just this moment of, and I watched the baby in that same moment of, and it was, somebody do something. You know, he was just fussing and crying and tossing, and he was just looking at his parents, do something, make it better. You know, that's just how we feel sometimes, do something, make it better. But slowly by slowly, we realize nobody can ever do anything except ourselves in our relationship to the infinite. And at first, and we have to be honest about this, that's a somewhat terrifying thought. Swamiji said once so movingly, it's a state of consciousness I have to take his word for, not one I know. He said, even at the point of divine realization, he said, when you suddenly realize that that it's all one consciousness, that all of this apparent separateness has just been waves on the ocean, and that it's just one vast ocean of infinite light, he said, just for a moment, you feel intensely lonely. He said, and then the realization comes that within that oneness there is bliss. And all that loneliness evaporates in the state of infinite bliss. Master says, and we have it on the wall up here, a tiny bubble of laughter. I have become the sea of mirth itself. There's a wonderful tape of Paramhansa Yogananda saying that line over in his Bengali accent. A tiny bubble of laughter. I have become the sea of mirth itself. And then he's saying it to a crowd. He says, say it with me again and again. A tiny bubble of laughter. I have become the sea of mirth itself. Again, again, a tiny bubble of laughter. And you just hear this sort of transition from I'm just alone in this world, just wandering around hoping for the best, to this understanding that there's only one consciousness, and that consciousness is bliss. But between the first glimpse of that and the final realization are all these days and nights where we pull in this direction and think, oh, yes, Lord, I only want you and this and this and this and this. But God made us that way, and he expects it to take a while. And that's where I was saying this image of the Divine Mother is such a comforting one. Because whether or not you've been gifted with a human mother who personifies these qualities, the heart's longing for that can manifest it at least in imagination. That there is a living presence that is there with us, and we should never, ever, ever be alone in this world. We should never allow ourselves to believe that we're alone in this world, and we should never, by our inattention, feel alone in this world. This is, in fact, this is the Martha and Mary that's being talked about in our scripture today. Of course we have to work. I mean, if you think in human terms, Jesus was there at the house, and he probably brought a great crowd with him. and it was probably mealtime, and they were expecting to eat. And Martha was hosting them. She had to cook for them. She had to prepare. But Mary was hosting too. And I love the little part that Swamiji throws into the commentary. We don't know that Jesus didn't say, "Mary, help your sister." You know, we don't know what he said. He just answered Martha on her own terms. "Martha, what is the point of all of this? By your inattention to your own consciousness, you have abandoned the only responsibility you actually have." Many, many times through the years, I know Swami Kriyananda has given people advice, people who are even in critical jobs, critical situations, who have gone beyond their own, worked beyond their own capacity to feel joyful and peaceful. And recently he said to a woman, he said, "You must promise me you will never work so hard that it takes away your peace of mind. Never." And Master, there was a story told about Master when he was opening the lake shrine in Southern California. This was in the late 1940s, maybe the early 1950s. And he was working extremely hard. He knew that his life was very close to the end because he died in 1952. The other disciples, his students and disciples, didn't understand why he was working so hard. But in retrospect, it was obvious. And he had declared that this place was going to open. Maybe this was the Encinitas Hermitage, but I think it was Lake Shrine. And he had built these towers, and they had gilded lotuses on the top with gold leaf. And they were working literally day and night to meet this big gala opening that they were having, that dignitaries were coming. And in the middle of all of this, one of the devotees just didn't show up for work. You know, all day, he just wasn't there. He never came. And the next day when he came, Master said to him, "Where were you yesterday?" Like that. And he said, "Oh, sir, I felt that I needed to meditate all day yesterday." "Oh, that's fine," Master said. "Fine. You know, no problem." Obviously, that was a priority. Now, exercise that somewhat cautiously. I remember years ago when Shivani was running our garden at Ananda Village, and working in the garden in those days was really hard work. I was going to say it was before global warming, when it was still hot. But I mean, the temperatures were very, very hot in the summer, and it was just very hard work. And she said, "Sir, what do I do when someone says to me that we're critically, gardening doesn't wait for anyone. You just have to do what you have to do at the time." She says, "What do I do when people don't come to work because they say Krishna told them not to?" And Swamiji's answer was very serious. She said, "I know, and it's a very fundamental principle of Ananda, that people are more important than any of the projects. That the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The projects are there to help us grow spiritually, not to just be an end in themselves." She said, "I know," she said, "that people are more important than things, but aren't some things more important than people's egos?" Like that. And he said, sort of slowly, he said, "Yes," he said, "that could be true, but before you act, you better be very sure you can tell the difference." And then he went on to say something which was even more interesting. He said, "And you don't want your ego to get involved in this. Before you stand up to someone on the basis of what you think is right, you have to ask yourself also, what kind of consciousness am I putting out?" Because our consciousness too, Swamiji gave us all advice, those of us in leadership positions. "Don't be so presumptuous," he said, "as to think that your own consciousness is not also part of the equation." He said, "Even if it's the right advice, but if in giving it you disturb your consciousness," he said, "don't do it." Even if he says, for example, a stern response would be more helpful and appropriate to a person than a charitable one, but to give such a stern response would disturb the vibrations of your consciousness, be charitable. You see? Because when it all comes down to it, the only thing that matters is what vibrations we put out. This is what Jesus is saying to Martha and Mary. "Martha, you're doing all that work, but you're not really doing any good work at all. Just let that work go." And Mary is doing the only thing that matters, which is she is responding to her inner consciousness. Now, the balance in all of this, as Swamiji says, is not really the question of whether we work or not. You know, Krishna tells us not to go to work. Pretty soon, we're going to be out on the streets. We're not going to have to work because we're not going to have a home or a job or, you know, anything that we really have to have. Life is not constituted for us to just float downstream. But there is one goal in life, and that is consciousness. And we constantly have to fight against the thought that's built into our own nature that, oh, no, 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 busy, busy, do this, do this, do this. No, no, no. With the right consciousness, everything else follows. Another fundamental principle of Ananda, which one repeats over and over again, where there is Dharma, there is always victory. Dharma is are those actions which serve to cultivate within us right consciousness. Dharma is that which cultivates within you right consciousness. Do what is uplifting in a divine way for your consciousness, and everything else will follow. No matter what the logical mind tells you, no matter what the world tells you, live in righteousness, and all of God's grace will flow into you after that. This is Divine Mother's love for us. This is the great promise contained within this human life. God bless you.